This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 1205. It's Friday, May 31st, 2019. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us in the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart. 76 degrees in Chicago under mostly sunny skies, going up to 84 today. Sunshine, some clouds. A beautiful Friday afternoon in store for you. The complete AccuWeather forecast coming up in just a couple of minutes. The WBBM Noon Business Hour presented by Old Second Bank. The markets are deep in a negative territory this afternoon. Let's get the latest now from Bloomberg and Elisa Parenti.
That's right, Rob. On the day, the Dow falling 278 points. We have tumbled back to 24,892. NASDAQ losing 1.25% or 91 points. S&P sliding by 30. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index falling 1.5%. The losses come after President Trump threatened to slap tariffs on Mexico. A wide range of stocks are feeling the impact, including tech companies, car makers, retailers, and railroads. And oil futures are sinking 3.33% right now, falling all the way back down to $54.70 a barrel. So stocks are on track for their worst monthly performance since the rout at the end of last year. For the month of May, the Dow and S&P are down more than 6%. The NASDAQ has fallen almost 8%. Back to you, Rob.
And speaking of the tariffs imposed on Mexico, we'll talk about the impact on the automotive industry coming up at 12:49. But first, out of the gate, we'll talk to Greg Hines from Crane Chicago Business about this morning's news conference in which Mayor Lightfoot called on Chicago Alderman Ed Burke to resign in the wake of the latest federal indictment against him. And then, as lawmakers in Springfield consider marijuana legalization on the statewide level, a lot of companies are going to be taking a second look at their HR policies if that law does become a reality. All that and more coming up in the Noon Business Hour right here on WBBM.
Your daily transaction for useful information. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The expected legalization of recreational marijuana in Illinois will impact employers and employees. We'll discuss some of the issues in our next segment. Right now, the latest indictment against Alderman Ed Burke is just the latest in a long line of corruption cases involving local and state politics. We're joined now by Greg Hines, columnist with Crane Chicago Business. Greg, welcome back to the program. First off, at any point in recent history, has the mayor of the city of Chicago come out and called the news conference to explicitly call for an alderman to resign? It sounds like this morning's news conference was uncharted territory.
It kind of was. There have been, some public hints, but usually the stuff under Rahm Emanuel when people got in trouble for it, just to kind of work this out behind the scenes, and the mayor would come out and announce that so-and-so has agreed in the public interest to step aside because he or she's been indicted. In this case, though, Burke and Lightfoot are in politically opposite corners. It's actually good politics for her right now to bash him around and bash him around good. It's also a little bit of good government. So, it is kind of unprecedented. The circumstances of the other people involved are a little different, too.
And this is part of the ongoing investigation from Alderman Solis wearing a wire last year because he got into some trouble himself. Is this the tip of the iceberg when it comes to fleshing out some hanky-panky at City Hall?
All indications, Rob, is that there's going to be more indictments to come of other people. We don't know how many, but already we have some absolute classics in Chicago. I mean, the line about where Solis says to Burke, where he's asking, has the money been paid? And it says, has the tuna arrived? Stuff like that. Burke using profanity after one of the developers didn't hire his law firm, but they were supposed to. They're not going on my agenda. I'm not giving them blankety-blank. It's bad enough, but yeah, you're probably right. Everybody thinks it's going to get worse. We'll find out.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing that in the rich history of the lexicon of corruption in Chicago and Illinois politics, that you could find a phrase to top Governor Blagojevich's bleeping golden line from 11 years ago. But Ed Burke found a way.
Yeah, I haven't noticed. If there was Olympic competition for best political corruption lines, Chicago politicians would win it all the time. I mean, another one of my favorites in there is when Burke and Solis are talking about how they're trying to get the developer of the old Maine post office to hire Burke's law firm, and Solis is going to get a cut of that money. Burke says, well, you know, we have to make this look real. We have to provide them different services because really they want to hire a Jewish law firm. It's disgusting and mesmerizing at the same time.
Well, it's that old tribal clannish politics that you thought no longer existed in Chicago, but instead it just went behind closed doors and underground.
Well, it's even more subtle than that, in my opinion. It's plain old greed. I mean, Lightfoot is right that you've got to take the money out of politics. People should go into this business because they want to serve the public, not because they want to fatten their pocketbook. And as we know, there's been legions of Chicago politicians who've done exactly the opposite of what she recommends for well over a century. And she wants to change it. I think the question we're going to ask ourselves when we get on the other side of this, though, is Chicago also wants a strong mayor who can get stuff done. And that means using a lot of tools and beating people up a little bit in public and leaning at them and giving them patronage or whatever. And the real question is, can Lori Lightfoot lead the city where it needs to go without becoming a little bit of an old-fashioned boss herself? When all this is over, I think we'll turn to that question.
If the U.S. attorney does run through city council with righteous fury and starts handing out indictments to some of these aldermen who, in the case of Ed Burke, have had this personal fiefdom for 50 years, will that fundamentally change the way business, I mean literal business, is done in the city in terms of zoning and permitting, and maybe what they used to call the corruption tax will no longer be in effect?
You know, I would hope so, but maybe I've just been around too long, but I can remember a couple generations of politicians going down. I mean, folks like Otto Carter and Ron Blagojevich and Paul Wagoda and Tom Keene. A lot of people now don't remember those names, but those were other politicians from not really that far back, a generation or two, who did it. And even though they went down, even though there's still a U.S. Attorney's office, the local politicians have continued to get themselves in trouble and continue to do the same thing. How you totally root that out and stop it? It's almost like a dandelion. You pull it up and it comes back again next spring. You know how to kill the darn thing. I'm not sure anybody has figured it out. Maybe this one would be enough to finally cure it. Who knows? I hope so.
And with Mayor Lightfoot, dressing down Ed Burke at City Council a couple of days ago and then calling on him to resign today. In City Hall, could someone hear the soft laughter of Harold Washington echoing through the air?
I think you're hearing a lot of soft laughter throughout the air. I also suspect that when Lori Lightfoot publicly dressed down Eddie Burke, he frankly deserved it because he was trying the stupid parliamentary trick to obstruct her reorganization of city council. I think she knew what was coming. Lori Lightfoot used to be a former federal prosecutor. She has good eyes and ears, and I suspect she knew. And frankly, I thought Ed Burke knew that it was coming. If you look at the tape of how he was that day, he looked old and tired and worn out for the first time that I've ever seen. Usually he's a bundle of energy despite his age. Lots of people have lots of different emotional reasons to show here.
Well, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon. Greg Hines, columnist, Crane Chicago Business. Coming up, gauging the impact of legalized marijuana on the workplace.
Making sense of your dollars. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It seems to be just a matter of time before a bill legalizing the recreational use of marijuana is approved in Illinois, and it will likely have an effect on employment policies. Welcome in Scott Cruz, an employment attorney at Clark Hill, based in Chicago. Scott, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
Once the marijuana bill becomes a reality, it seems like more of a when, not an if. How much time will businesses businesses take to consult with employment attorneys and then rewrite their HR practices or policies to reflect the new law? And what will they have to look for?
Sure. Good question. Now, hopefully, employers already have in place a comprehensive drug policy, so they shouldn't have to do much. To the extent that a company does not have have a drug policy in place, that's when they're going to need to consult with counsel, figure out, okay, what does the act state and what are the requirements under there? Can I maintain a zero tolerance policy? The act says yes. Can I discipline employees for coming to work impaired under marijuana? The act says yes. Can I still drug test people if I have a reasonable suspicion, a good faith belief that they're coming to work high? Yes, you can do that. These are all things that any drug policy needs to have. But again, hopefully most employers already have some type of policy in place.
Which jurisdiction has precedence in when it comes to drug laws? Because even though it will be legalized recreationally in Illinois, it's still illegal on a federal level. If you're a large company or even a smaller business, who has the highest authority there?
Federal law does. And that's what provides employers with the authority to maintain this drug-free workplace policy, even though Illinois says it's legal here. That's what allows employers to discipline individuals for using, possessing, or having marijuana in the workplace, because marijuana is still a Schedule I narcotic under federal law. So until it becomes illegal under federal law, employers have the right to discipline, have these policies in place, because federal law is always going to trump state law.
Now, what about companies that seem to have that work hard, play hard ethos? I mean, your company is your firm is based in Prudential Plaza. We're speaking into Prudential Plaza right now, and the window in this studio looks out over on a balcony that a lot of people, it's open to people in the building, and people go out there with glasses of wine or six packs of beer on a Friday afternoon to unwind after the workday. If companies start offering or say it's okay for you to bring in a joint or two if you want to unwind on a Friday afternoon on the balcony here, where do their HR policies kick in?
Their HR policies go right out the door if they let that happen. Again, I wouldn't recommend that. They should maintain a drug-free workplace policy, a zero-tolerance policy. There's productivity issues. There's safety issues involved. So my recommendation to my clients is have the policy, maintain a drug-free, zero-tolerance policy. Don't let, you know, Scott go in on his noon hour, have an edible, and come back and start doing work. It's just not going to help for productivity.
So even the three-martini lunch will not be replaced by the three edible lunch anytime soon.
No, that's good for Mad Men, but probably not good for, in this day and age, for marijuana.
Well, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon. Scott Cruz, employment attorney at Clark Hill, based in Chicago. Still ahead in Entrepreneur Friday, helping college graduates make entry into the workforce. WBBM News Time, 12:25. Now WBBM Business News from Bloomberg and Elisa Parenti.
Well, Rob, we continue to see losses of 1% or more on the day. The Dow falling 262 points. We're back down to 24,907. NASDAQ lower by 83 points, and the S&P is falling 28 points. The Bloomberg, the Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg is down 1.33%. And big losses for crude oil futures. They keep growing, now down almost 4%, losing another $2 on the day today. Remember yesterday, crude fell $2. So we're at $54.40 a barrel. Now we've got a check on commodities and grains with Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal. Pete?
We have end of the week and end of the month profit taking. We've been almost straight up in the last couple of weeks. Corn for July down 4.5. December down 4 at 4.48 and a quarter. We have July soybeans down 6.75. November's down 6 at 9.09.5. And July wheat's up, down 3/4 at 5.13.75. Lower across the board. And this is Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities and Normal.
Pete, thank you. With business at 25 and 55, live from Bloomberg, I'm Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
WBBM News Time, 12:30. Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart, and these are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Stocks are losing ground. We'll see what's impeding the markets. In Entrepreneur Friday, we have the founder of a Chicago-based career advice platform designed to help college graduates kickstart their careers. President Trump's threat to hike tariffs on Mexican imports is rattling the U.S. auto industry. And Mayor Lightfoot says her call for indicted Alderman Ed Burke to step down is about restoring trust to the public. WBBM Business, the markets are in the negative right now. The Dow is down 253 points, the NASDAQ down 80, the S&P 500 down 27. AccuWeather says it's a beautiful Friday. Sunshine, some clouds, a warm breeze this afternoon, a high of 84. Right now, it is 77 degrees at O'Hare, 79 at Midway, 77 degrees at the lakefront as the noon business hour continues at 12:31, presented by Old Second Bank. Markets slumping this final day of the trading week. We're joined by Brian Battle, Director at Performance Trust Capital Partners and Advisor at PT Asset Management, based in Chicago. Brian, it seems like the folks who work in the trading pits or around the trading pits or maintain the trading computers are going to be really looking forward to the change in calendar tomorrow.
That's right. You know, Rob, we've had a tough go of it anyway. The major averages are on track for the worst month of the year. And we've had about, this is about a 12-week low, so a 6-weekly loss, too, is the longest slump since 2011. So today's sell-off is just a continuation of that trend, but it was accelerated by the surprise announcement last night that Donald Trump is going to use tariffs as a weapon against a trading partner to stem immigration. So here we're mixing business and public policy. So the good news is we're only down 250 points, because if this was a couple of years ago, we might have been down 1,000 points. But the markets are getting used to the president, that he says kind of outlandish things to negotiate from, and so we're hoping this all is all a tempest in a teapot. But it's concerning because the U.S. is already negotiated the USMCA, it's United States-Mexico-Canadian Trade Agreement, which is kind of like NAFTA 2.0. So it hasn't even been ratified yet, and the U.S. is going to use tariffs as a weapon against immigration. So mixing two kind of topics. So we are down today 236. We're down 6% for the month, but we all have to remember that the S&P is up about 10% for the year. So a really bad month, or kind of a bad stretch here the past couple of weeks, but overall, not a disaster, you know, in the grand scheme of things.
The data point that everyone seems to lock onto when it comes to the tangible impact of a trade war or trade skirmish or trade saber rattling with Mexico is the price of avocados. But the auto industry is really ensnared in this. And how do supply chains work in the auto industry between the U.S. and Mexico?
So that's a really complicated question, but you're right. A way bigger impact is the car industry. The S&P, the car makers in the S&P 500 are down about 4% today, with GM down about 4.5%. So a lot of how tariffs are charged and where is origin, where is a car manufactured, is dependent on content. So where are the pieces come from and where are they assembled? So that's a complicated answer, but the quick answer is there's a lot of automobile manufacturing going on in Mexico for U.S. automobile manufacturers, and this is really complicates that whole transaction, because the transfer of parts over the border and then the transfer of automobiles across the border gets way more expensive. The fact is that tariffs are bad for global trade. It's bad for everyone. It can be used as a weapon, certainly, but all it really does is slows down global growth, because a tariff is really a tax on commerce, and so it's not good for anyone. You know, you can understand the political reasons for doing it, but the economic reasons are bad, and the outcomes are poor for everyone.
Another entity that was probably hoping for a new start in the second half of the year is Uber, which announced it lost more than $1 billion in the first quarter. And as someone who is not the CEO of a Fortune 500 company, when you lose $1 billion over one quarter of the year, you kind of have to sit back and tip your cap.
Yeah, it's quite an established thing to manage to lose $1 billion in a quarter. So what's interesting about Uber is it's a global ride-hailing company. It's the biggest one around. They lost $1 billion with about $2.75 billion of revenue. So they managed to lose about 50 cents on the dollar, or 33 cents on the dollar, which bad news, I guess, for them is their sales were up about 14%, so they're losing even more money. So the more money they make, the more money they lose. The question about Uber is, can they turn into a profitable company? So they've got the market and investors have given them a long leash. They're very patient with Uber to try and see if they can turn it into a business that makes money. They know it's a business that attracts riders. They know it's a business that can transact and is very useful and people want it. The real question for investors, and when will investors lose patience in Uber losing money? And then, so that's what we're all trying to figure out, is can Uber actually make money? But this is the first time since they've gone public that we've got a real good look at their revenues, and they lost $1 billion. Like you said, it's quite an accomplishment.
Is there another case of a company that has become the name of which is interchangeable with the service they provide, like a Xerox or a Kleenex, that is just so ubiquitous, and then people know what it is and what it does, and it's its own, you know, if you don't say ride sharing, let's call an Uber, that has such a hard time turning a profit?
Yeah, there's a lot of, this is echoes of the dot-com boom. You know, you remember all those dot-com companies like Pets.com and even like Netflix. Like if you're going to watch a movie on TV, you say, let's get Netflix. You know, you don't think of Hulu or the other branded names. So it's always hard to take a startup and an innovator and get them from an idea that's really great that people want, and then turn it into a business. So having a great idea that you can sell for a low cost is easy to do. Having a great idea that you can make money at is really hard. So that's what Uber is. They've got a great idea. They're trying to figure out how to turn it into a business. They've gotten a big break here, though, because as the stock market has sold off, interest rates have also declined in the markets, too. That's the other story. It's a little untold. Interest rates on 10-year treasuries are 2.15%. 215 is very, very low. So I just want to make sure anybody that hasn't refinanced their mortgage, 30-year mortgage rates are around 4% or maybe a little bit lower right now. So I just want to make sure before we run out of time that something everybody should do is take a look at their mortgage and see if it might be a chance for a refi there. Because the other story is the stock market's kind of hanging in there, up 6% for the year. The bond market, with rates being this low, is signaling that there's a recession coming. So there's kind of a standoff here between the bond market and the stock market. And that's also creating some tension here in the U.S. capital markets.
Well, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon. Brian Battle, Director at Performance Trust Capital Partners and Advisor at PT Asset Management, based in Chicago. Coming up next, an Entrepreneur Friday, building a business by giving career advice to college grads.
An hour of financial planning each weekday. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Frustration over immigration has prompted President Trump to threaten new tariffs on products imported from Mexico. And one of the major areas of impact would be the car industry. We're joined by John McElroy, automotive industry analyst and host of Autoline.tv, based in Detroit. John, welcome back to the program. It sounds like most of the sell-off taking place on Wall Street today is driven by General Motors. And how would this tariff proposal specifically impact GM?
Well, it would impact GM, but it's going to impact literally every single automaker that has and builds cars in the United States, because they get so many parts from Mexico. And in fact, there are U.S. parts that go to Mexico, get assembled into an engine, a transmission, other parts, then come back into the United States. So there's even some parts that go from the U.S. to Mexico, back into the U.S., back into Mexico, back into the U.S. And so you're going to have certain parts and components that are going to be hit by these 5% tariffs. In some places, they're going to be double tariffed. And this is going to create a major headache for not just the car companies, not just GM, but also the suppliers, at a time when car sales are slowing down. So it's a double whammy for the auto industry.
And how long has this been the standard practice in the manufacture of automobiles?
Ever since NAFTA passed in the early 1990s. We've got a great supply chain between the United States, Canada, and Mexico. And parts come and flow just as if they're going from Michigan to Illinois to Ohio or whatnot. It's the same kind of procedure. And so the industry has built up this incredibly powerful and very productive supply chain, and tariffs like this that are being predicated on problems with border immigration are going to definitely have a ripple effect that is going to hurt the auto industry.
Now, the protectionists would say, well, now we can just reopen manufacturing lines in northern Ohio and Michigan and return, and all those jobs will come back. Is that a vision that can actually come true?
Not with these 5% tariffs. They raise prices, but they would not raise them nearly enough to force more manufacturing back into the United States. Now, the tariffs that the president is talking about with China, or potentially even putting 25% tariffs on all passenger cars, definitely would drive more manufacturing to the U.S., but at the same time, it would also cause prices of cars to really go up by a lot, many thousands of dollars.
Has the heads of the big three, have they do they take this particularly seriously, or is this another, or can they just kind of write this off as, well, this is just more rhetoric coming out of a White House that has a lot of rhetoric?
Well, they probably have their fingers crossed and hope that it's just rhetoric. But you can't plan on that. I mean, there is so much industrial work being done that you can't base your planning on hopes. You've got to know what's going on, and you've got to plan for the worst case. And I'm sure that's what they're doing right now, is planning for the worst case.
Well, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon. John McElroy, automotive industry analyst and host of Autoline.tv, based in Detroit. Coming up next, it's Entrepreneur Friday, helping recent college graduates get a leg up as they venture out into the working world.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Entrepreneur Friday, and this afternoon we're focusing on a business designed to help college graduates successfully enter the workforce. Welcome in Armida Markarova, founder of thecareerbloom.com, based in Chicago. Armida, welcome to the program. It sounds like you have an extensive professional resume, many years in marketing, and you just started this company. And was this simply a case of you had been giving away career advice to many people and wanted to get paid for it?
Hi. Well, thanks for having me on the show. Well, I wasn't really getting paid for it. I did a couple of, I was invited to do some keynote presentations at a couple of universities and youth organizations, and I received overwhelming response from students and recent college graduates just connecting with me on LinkedIn and asking for very specific advice. So I just kind of started putting them all together, replying to them, guiding them, and then really started also documenting them on thecareerbloom.com. So it grew from there. It came just from, you know, one-on-one conversations with students and really mentoring them, eventually growing into a platform right now that has hundreds of pieces of actionable tips, to-do lists, and things that really guide them from interviewing process to actually how to be successful on the job.
What is the biggest challenge that a college graduate is facing once they get out of college? Is it landing that first job, or is it navigating some of the choices you have to make once you get that first job? You know, for, when it comes to figuring out what benefits are right for you, how can you maximize them, or is it both?
You hit spot on it with it. Yeah, it's actually both. 78%, according to some recent research, shows that 78% of college graduates feel actually unprepared to enter the workforce because they don't have the necessary skills that to be successful on the job. It's also about how do you position yourself. You know, there are so many interviews that they have to go through, with most of them not having enough experience. You know, they may have an internship or two, so they're not sure how exactly to package those experiences in a way that will resonate with employers. So it's a combination of both, but one of the things that is really key for employers to note is that close to 80% of employees always say that they will actually stay with the company longer if only they invested in their career development programs. They don't want free coffee or free gym membership. Those are the things that are sort of like nice to have, but not a must have. It's investment in their long-term career development programs that keeps employees loyal to a company.
Very quickly, there are a zillion websites that can help you find job leads, or at least let you know where the openings exist. But what's the fastest way to actually getting into a cubicle of your own? Is it through a website, or is it through your alumni network, or is it through some sort of other professional networking organization?
It's a combination of both. I think for college students, especially and recent graduates, networking is really important. It's And it's not so much about showing up to these events and just handing over your business card. It's about building long-lasting relationships with people way before you are hoping to get introduced for a potential job interview. So networking, or as I say, relationship building, is much more important. And, of course, applying for a variety of positions, it never hurts.
Well, thanks for joining us this afternoon. Armita Markarova, founder of the CareerBloom.com, our entrepreneur this Entrepreneur Friday. You can find past programs and later today a podcast of this hour at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the Radio.com app.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.